Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Lior Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Appreciate you making your way here, checking out this episode. If you're a first-time offender or even long-time listener but not subscribed, I hope you take that second to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now or any of the big spots, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast from. We'll bring you brand new interviews to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with all your favorite artists, discover some new ones, and know what's happening in the music world. Kyle Meredith here, and today I'm going to be speaking with Tanya Donnelly. The co-founder of Belly, the Breeders, and Throwing Muses has teamed up with the Parkington Sisters for an album of covers that finds them taking on everybody from Wings, The Go-Go's, Leonard Cohen, Linda Ronstadt, The Pretenders. She'll tell us about covering Split Ends, Echo and the Bunnymen, and the reason why a lot of these songs come from the era of the 70s and 80s. Of course, we're going to discuss the age-old idea of how to approach a cover. Do you do it faithfully? Do you put your new spin on it? And speaking of covers, you know, this isn't her only covers project. If you've been following Tanya online, you'll know that she's been doing another cover series, an online cover series, in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, with a lot of the proceeds going to places that help out independent venues, that help out Black Lives Matter. So we're also going to discuss artist activism now versus back in the 90s. You'll also hear about how doing these covers might affect her next album, and we'll get an update. Will there be another Belly record, and what can we expect from a project that she's doing with Dylan in the Movies? So let's get into it and discussing Tanya Donnelly and the Parkington Sisters. It's Kyle Meredith with Tanya Donnelly.
Hey, it's Tanya. How are you?
It's been really interesting, the new release with the Parkington Sisters and what you've been doing on your own, because you've basically been in covers land for what it seems like all of 2020. Is that a complete because of quarantine? You know, I don't know how far in advance you had the record with the Parkington Sisters planned, but is that a coincidence?
Yes, it's a total coincidence. I had no intentions of doing an online cover series as well. That was just a result of fundraising for what started as local venues and musicians impacted by COVID here, and then sort of branched out in scope in terms of benefactors of the series. So, but yeah, no, I had no plans on to do the Bandcamp piece until lockdown.
But here you are, and you've covered a lot of ground on other people's songs at this point too. I mean, I don't know if we're completely keeping tally, but it's interesting even to see the differences, I guess, in what you chose with the album versus what you're able to cover with the Bandcamp series, because, you know, I think a lot of artists are saying whether they're covering someone else's songs or writing songs, a lot of songs become even unintentionally political just because that's what we're inundated with. The Bandcamp right. songs, you're able to choose those as more topical, but did that happen in the same way with the record?
No. The album was, you know, sort of prior to this. We've been working on that all told, probably we've been in the studio together 2 weeks tops, but those days have been spread out over about a year and a half or so. So there was no, at that point, we weren't choosing based on any political or topical points. So, and even the series, even the Bandcamp series, I have to say as well, even I was obviously more thoughtful about choice, but it also, a lot of things that played into those choices were the reason, you know, that those songs were all picked from online suggestions, and a lot of those choices were made based on the reasoning behind the person wanting the song to be covered. There was one couple wanted a song to dance to at their wedding, friend of mine, you know, people who on the side sort of DM'd very personal reasons for wanting to hear a particular song. And so those little kind of behind the scenes communications were very much why I chose the songs that I chose. So,
and it's a nice personal way, a nice personal touch, I guess, to stay connected to fans. But, you know, I'll point all this, sort of the big topics out before we get into the record here too, because that has allowed you, it's been a way to support causes that we're all hearing about, you know, from Black mm-hmm. Lives Matter and what protests in general or what's going on. And I think a lot of artists are looking for ways to do that. I mean, That's sort of one, I don't want this to come across the wrong way, that's sort of one of the easiest ways that an artist can get in the game, though, right? Is just to say, listen, this is where you can direct your money. This is how you can help.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think it's much more, and a lot, again, back to the behind-the-scenes conversations and the DMs of people on Bandcamp who bought the song and then also supplemented with a separate contribution or donation to the causes that we were working for at that through the series. So, that it was like two lights being shined
right.
at the same time. Just so yeah, it is absolutely an effective way of, you know, bringing attention.
And just to continue that, can you name a few of the places that you have been donating to and your listeners and fans?
Yeah, sure. We did. So I will admit that a couple of them, for instance, the last one, which was an EP, the intention was to do Black Lives Matter Boston and then Black Lives Matter Rhode Island. But the Rhode Island piece was a little more vague in terms of like what their organization around it was. So we did Black Lives Matter Boston, and then we did Kids Count in Rhode Island, which is a child advocacy organization there. So we split it that way. We've done raise money for clubs here, specific clubs. And in fact, the first few were sort of is going to go to local venues, and it went to several local venues here. And then also to the Boston Cambridge COVID Musicians Fund here as well. That was a few weeks in a row, which basically what they do, that's sort of treated sort of as needed organization. People will basically apply to them, the musicians here who are being general business musicians who are being impacted and losing gigs and don't have health insurance. And so it's been sort of a wide range of causes.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. I mean, I appreciate any time artists are kind of using that platform to do that. And it's,
yeah.
I will say, I've not gone through the history to see, you know, what you've been a part of throughout your career, but I have to imagine, knowing what I do know about you and the bands that you've been in, that advocacy has been a part of that to some degree. Have you noticed any difference in what it's like to be an artist now versus, you know, when we were talking about Rock the Votes, you know, in the 90s and different things like, you know, there was a very strong, of course, the pro-choice movements of the 90s that was happening. But have you seen a difference in how it is to be an artist and to carry a message like this?
I think that there's a balance that needs to be struck between really being involved and continuing to be involved and educate. And I'm going to speak very clearly on the Black Lives Matter movement right now to make sure that that does not stop, quote unquote, trending. There's, you know, I feel like continuing to amplify Black voices right now and sort of, you know, pass the mic while still, you know, making it clear that this is a long haul fight and not just sort of like a series of sound bites that you can then move on from. So I think self-education, and, you know, this is something I'm really taking all my cues from BLM right now in terms of the literature I'm reading, the movies I'm watching, just being really taking that seriously and also, you know, just amplifying rather than supplementing, I guess. I mean, still learning. You know, there's no end to that. There's not going to come a point in the next few months where I'm going to answer this question gracefully.
No. But and that's the right answer, because we are still learning. But it's so encouraging that it obviously feels different this time. At least to me, it does. Because unlike those times in the past where it did sort of, I mean, it's not like we ever weren't working on this as a world, but the conversation, the, you know, trending, whatever you want to call that, you know, it would come and go as the hot topic. And for the first time, I feel like it's stuck past the 2 week point. You know, it's now where we are in it for the long haul. And I think everybody is. So.
Right.
I'd like to hope so anyway.
Yeah. I would like to hope so too. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to take too much also away from, that's an odd seg, from the record at hand, because you have made a beautiful album with the Barkington Sisters, which I wasn't as familiar with them. What's your all's history?
So I met Nora Parkington, who is oddly the only sister who's not on this album, through Hot Stove Cool Music, which is an event here that we do every year. We actually just did a virtual version last week, but I met her. She was playing violin with a few artists that night, and we sort of, at one point, I was doing something with Bill Janovitz and a couple of other people, and someone said, hey, Nora, do you want to join on a few songs? And without even asking what they were, she said, yeah, sure. And I just remember thinking, oh, that's a different class of musician from me. And we just sort of started, I fell in love with her playing, and we sort of bonded that night. And from that point, I started listening to her family band, Parkington Sisters, and fell in love with them, started going to shows. You know, we became friends after that point. And so for this album, when American Laundromat asked if I wanted to do a covers album, when I was thinking about whether I wanted to do that or not, and they came to mind, and it just kind of, I could tell what, I just felt like, oh, I could do a Parkington Sisters album, which is a dream of mine. And I can join their family this way. this is my in.
It could have been stalkerish. That could have been stalkerish just a little bit.
There's a fine line with me in that. And so I basically farmed it out to them. And they, as expected, just really took ownership of it. And it really does sound so much like them with me on top, which is what I wanted.
As far as those songs, did you notice that, like a lot of these songs, you know, you've got some 70s, you've got some 80s in here. Did you gravitate toward that era for any specific reason?
I didn't. And that has been pointed out to me. I think it's because, you know, there's sort of a very liquid overarching theme of songs that run through my brain pan all the time and have for decades. So I think that those lifelong heavy rotation songs were what, you know, that's what I went to first. So, yeah. And so those all clearly come from a tight little era.
Well, so, you know, I was trying to think, like, I don't know specifically when your coming of age years are musically, like for a lot of people, you know, that 17 to 20 era, you know, that really becomes the songs that make us in a lot of ways. You know, that's the heavy mm-hmm. DNA, as people say. So that's what I say. I didn't know if any of these were kind of hitting around that era in your life where it was just like when we're absorbing, you know, like they say, like the sponge that we are in that period in our life.
Yeah. And I think absolutely. And from a songwriting perspective, they're sort of, these are a lot of the musicians and songwriters that impacted on the songwriter I want to be, not necessarily the songwriter that I am, but they have a huge, just the layers, all of those people are layer into how I play, how I write, what I aspire to. So
it's some really cool choices on here. I love seeing that Split Enz was on here. Of course, I love Neil Finn. I love Crowded House, but Split Enz is like the great overlooked 80s band.
Yeah, I know. And it's, you know, I felt, I think because I was in a community of people that idolized them, it did surprise me later in the broader world that they weren't as, you know, they're definitely well known, don't get me wrong, but just, you know, in terms of being household names, I just assumed that Split Enz was up there. I mean, to me, I think the brothers in general are unbelievable songwriters. I think Neil Finn is one of the greatest living songwriters.
Absolutely. But that's not one of their like most known songs though. That's a curious choice. What made you land there?
It's just that song runs through my head and has for decades. I think it's I like this sort of herky jerky. It's one of those songs that's sort of shambolic. It feels like it could fall apart at any second, but it doesn't. And I love that sort of, you know, the rhythm of it, the sway of it. And then just lyrically, I just completely connect with the lyrics of that one. And I just feel like it's this great, perfect little, I don't want to say carnival because that doesn't do it justice. It's not a novelty song, but it just has this really interesting kind of vibe to it that I... And for the same reason that I love Ocean Rain too, which Ocean Rain to me feels like, you really do feel like this song feels like a boat. It feels like a ship. And that's what W has that same sort of feeling of, anything I say is going to sound.
That's all right. You're actually naming a band who even had I talk about Split Enz, who had a song called 6 Months in a Leaky Boat. So it's.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, and Echo, one of my, you know, all-time favorite bands too. I mean, like I said, I love the choices on here because they're not all obvious. Even the arguably the biggest song on here, which, you know, Wings, McCartney, Let Me Roll It, you know, that's still not even an obvious choice to me. And for a song like that, it like when you're covering a song, it's like the age-old argument, you know, do you stay faithful? Do you give it a twirl? Do you put your stamp on it? Like when you're hitting a song like that, how much thought goes into that?
Well, that's where the Parkingtons came in because that is, you know, having a unit, these women who have a vision, have a sound, are very confident in how they want to tackle something. And we, you know, I was in the studio with them the entire, you know, we were together the whole time, but they brought in just having it, bringing their thing to it, it just, and brought a cohesion to the whole, it really sounds like an album instead of a bunch of patchwork songs thrown together, which did require a lot of conversation ahead of time, which is sort of unusual for me and was wonderful to be part of in terms, you know, just really, I think that when I go into the studio with my own stuff, we have a structure, we have our parts, but there's a lot of flexibility once you're in there. And this was very sort of, all right, where are we going with this? Is this going to be pizzicata? Is this going to be, you know, long notes? Are we going to have any additional musicians come in? Like what is the vision for each of these? And that was really fun to be part of.
But you know, when you get around those orchestral type musicians, and I talk about because of the instruments they play, the conversation becomes much more intricate. That's interesting.
Yeah, and these are all like women who can, you know, they chart on the spot. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly proficient.
It's the opposite of punk rock, I guess. It's the other side. It's
But what I love about them too is that they are huge fans of the Happy Mistake. They will say things, you know, like Rose will say, like, we got to ugly this up somehow. And then, you know, we would have that conversation. It was just really inspiring to be around people who do balance, you know, technical skill with a real love of spontaneity and of understanding what serves a song, you know.
So I guess the question that I would probably ask when you have your next originals album is, we would look back and say, hey, did covering any of these songs, you know, influence how you were writing or what you were writing for this album? But I'll go ahead and throw that question out there now. Like, if you're writing, maybe you are, if you're writing original songs right now, do you find that you're taking little, like, you know, are you borrowing little ideas from all of these as you go along?
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely, every single person I've ever worked with, I walk away from with a gift, you know. And so they absolutely, working with them will absolutely impact how it is yet to be seen. But there are things that do, so I covered Buffalo Tom's song Frozen Lake for the series, the online Bandcamp series. And as soon as I finished playing guitar on that one, I immediately wrote a song. On the back of it, like, just something, as I was playing the guitar part for that, it sort of led to a whole full, you know, sort of tandem song. So that does happen. And in the studio with the Parkingtons, there would be times when a melody line would be discarded and I would snatch it up from future use. So I feel like, just in terms of just paying attention to what work can follow what you're working on, if that makes sense.
Right, right.
I think that's something to always have your ear open to.
And you mentioned Buffalo Tom there, and I was listening to Summer probably just yesterday, and, you know, a great rock song as it is. It just lined up to me that they might be the split ends of the 90s too, because talk about a band that should have been much more famous, you know, and I say that with all respect to Bill.
Yeah, they have, I feel like they're happy with, you know, they're close friends of mine, and they still have this sort of really nice, they're able to live a lot, you know, they're a duality in a really nice way, where they have their personal private lives, and then they also are able to continue to tour Australia, tour Europe, tour here very successfully all across the board. They still put out albums. It's sort of a nice, I feel like they kind of nailed the balance in a way, because they have a very faithful following.
Well, for good reason.
Probably
too.
Permanently. Yeah, I know.
Great. Do you know your next moves? Of course, I'm going to ask if, I mean, there's going to be more Belly. I was obviously such a huge fan of Dove. I want more. Do you know what the next few years looks like?
We don't. We had, Gail and I have been writing songs together, just sending each other little clips and working on each other's music. And I've been writing, you know, songs for my own, who knows where they're going to land, just continuing to write. We did have a big, well, it wasn't big. It was like a festival that we were planning for Providence with multiple bands and authors reading, and there was going to be a visual gallery, and that was supposed to be happening in August of this year. And we have tentatively planned it for the fall, for August of 21. And hopefully that can happen then.
Well, I'm obviously going to be looking forward to anything you do, and, you know, this just being one of them. This, again, the compliments, the Parkington Sisters record, this is a beautiful record. It's so much fun to listen
Thank
to.
Thank you so much.
How you guys do these covers. And is the online series that I read that you were kind of done with that for the moment, too?
I'm done with that for the moment, because I just have to, I have a project with Dylan, a band called Dylan in the Movies. I don't know what we're going to call our, it's actually Brian Sullivan, but he goes by that name. We're working on a project together. We've been writing together. Again, Gail and I have been writing. And then I just wanted to take some time to read, to be honest, and to write. And my, you know, kids are out of school now, so I have to a bigger percentage of focus on them.
It's always so nice talking to you. Thank you for taking the time
and
today.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time, and I hope all will be well there. and
absolutely
better days ahead.
Well, take care, and we'll see you around at some points.
Okay, good. I hope so.
All right, bye.
Bye.
My thanks to Tanya Donnelly. Again, that new album, Tanya Donnelly and the Parkington Sisters, due out August 14th. Of course, it's not the first time Tanya and I have spoken, and I'm going to include two other interviews from times we got together. The most previous time came in 2018 with the Belly reunion. After 23 years, the band reunited with their third LP called Dove. The set wasn't a rehash of the past, though, as Tanya told us. We talked about the natural evolution between the friends, the 25th anniversary of their debut Star, and some other bands from that famous Boston scene like the Breeders, Buffalo Tom, Juliana Hatfield, and Dinosaur Jr. Part 2 of Kyle Meredith with Tanya Donnelly.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. Well, busy and well.
That's exactly how it's supposed to be right now.
It is how it's supposed to be.
So it's all happening. It's finally all happening. 23 years later, and Belly is back with music. How does it feel right now? What's going through your head?
It feels great. I mean, I think the fact that it's something that wasn't, you know, this could be very easily have not happened, you know. So I think we sort of feel like it's a gift. And I mean, not to sound precious about it, but we're really grateful for this chance to work together again, primarily because I think individually we're missing that. And also just to sort of have this chance for the, you know, this sort of, I don't want to use the word closure because that seems too finite and we don't know where it's going to go from, or, you know, what we're going to do after this, but to have this very positive postscript has been just hugely meaningful to us. So just that alone, you know, to be quite honest with you, that's 90% of it for us. And then everything else is just bonus. So
I've been thinking about, I don't know, maybe psychologically what it would be like to be in this situation, because, you know, when you're writing and you've known these people forever, and you're probably wanting to still to write about who you are now, but there's still something like you're pushing it through a lens of something that we all knew from back then, you know, something that was structured in a different time. And I don't know, what an interesting way to make art.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that has come up a couple of times. And I mean, it sort of came up theoretically before we started working on this stuff. But once we were in the room writing together, and I think the fact that we broke out of an old pattern and decided that this time it was going to be completely collaborative from start to finish. I mean, almost every song is, you know, 25, 25, 25, 25. So that's been really, I mean, that has actually, I think breaking out of our former template has kind of solved that problem of, who are we and what is this going to be like? And we're also different now. And are we going to revert or is it going to move too quickly forward? Or all of those questions kind of were put to bed when we just started simply playing together again. So
with it sort of being changed like that then in the writing style, does it at all feel like a new band?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, musically it feels very new to us, and there are some on the album where we will verbalize, like, this feels very much like the old days. But for the most part, musically, we feel we're different as musicians, for one thing. And we work together in a much more harmonious way now, very much together. I would say in terms of the sort of vibe of hanging out together again, that feels very familiar, which is nice. It feels like in the first year that we were together originally, so which leads to some, you know, some sort of going backwards in time humor wise, a little kinder in the rehearsal space sometimes in a very positive way.
Hey, we all never grow up, really. So.
I know, well, you know, I mean, you know, when you're hanging out with with people who you grew up with, you know, there's a language that you kind of revert to sometimes. So that's,
I want to hear those tapes.
And it's not always exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing though, you know, to be a band this time around. I'm using that in the big sense because when you're young and you go into it, it's always that gang mentality, us against the world. You know, and these days, you know, everyone has their lives and everyone lives everywhere that they do. And to try to kind of pull that back in, like, how important is that, is the gang mentality when you're doing this again?
It's really important because, I mean, I feel like we, and again, I'm going to repeat myself, but we managed to sort of recapture that like team kind of somewhat insular mentality. But also now I think because we do all individually live out in the world in a very different way than we did back then, there's more, I mean, I feel like our, just even something as simple as the way we connect with people at shows now is much more porous in a very positive way. And I think that is because it's not so much us against them as us and them, mm-hmm. which comes with being aged, I think, you know, that we still are very much Team Belly, but there's a real sort of, the walls are down a bit in a way that's nice and sort of natural and it feels healthy and good.
Yeah. Of course, there's going to be tons of new people that, you know, Belly is a brand new band to them. And isn't that exciting?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Like project manager just sent us like a, I don't even know, so sort of like stats of who's listening and who's buying and who's, and it is a solid, some, you know, a lot of solid couple of decades younger than us in some cases, which we're sort of like, who are they? Who are these 30-year-olds?
They're there and they're
really
coming
gratifying.
For you.
Yeah. Good. They have a lot of energy, I hear. Bring them on. So, going to drain some of that off of them.
Yeah. Did you guys, were you able to actually write in the room together a lot, or was it some of it done over the line?
We, a little of both. So most, in the our initial, just because, just logistically, we can't be in the same room as often as we'd like. So we sent, you know, Gil would send a riff or a chorus, or I would send a chorus or a riff, you know, when Tom would send, it required a lot of trust because we were really sending some pretty raw stuff back and forth. And then we'd decide what was going to go with what, and I would add something onto something Gail or Tom sent and vice versa. And then Chris really informs where things go vibe-wise. You know, as soon as he starts playing, it changes things. You know, even to be quite honest, lyrically sometimes, I know that sounds bizarre, but it just does happen. And then Tom sort of kind of Frankensteined everything together, and then we had the bases, and then we would go in to play all together to kind of flesh it all out.
And sort of on the darker side, I mean, there was a cancer scare in the middle of this. I didn't know if I could ask about that.
Yeah.
But Gail had to go through some scary stuff, and did that just sideline mm-hmm. everything for a minute?
It sort of didn't. She was just so. I mean, I've loved and admired that woman for most of my adult life, but this coming through that with her, I was just, it was superhero level stuff she was pulling off. And the only thing that really changed, I mean, we did somewhat, fortuitously her treatments kind of worked around our schedule. And then we, you know, tinkered with some stuff, but we didn't want to cancel anything. You know, we took it tour to tour. The only thing that changed really is that we didn't, you know, I canceled a bunch of press and radio stuff, and we really just closed ranks somewhat, you know, there were no meet and greets, there were no, after shows, she was happy to talk to people and stuff, but yeah, she just, I mean, she can speak to the situation better than I, but we were all, to say that we were blown away is an understatement by what she did.
I personally had a lot of respect that she took the opportunity to talk about at that moment the Affordable Care Act and everything that was going on.
Yep.
You know, what an outstanding position, you know, and moment to be using that. So it's, which is still a weird way of saying that. I don't want that to come across the wrong way.
Yeah, and to say no, it doesn't come across. I mean, and I think that was, you know, her really what she wanted to say is, yes, this happened to me, but this is what I want, you know, what I want to talk about is ACA, you know, so, and to come from a point of, you know, true impact on that, you know, instead of just hypothetically, it was very, very strong.
Well, it landed pretty hard in the best way possible, I think, to the folks who was, you know, aware of it. And, you know, I don't know. There's nothing I was going to say, and here we are in all of the crap that we're in now, but that's really sort of unrelated.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's been, I mean, right now we're sort of starting the conversation of, you know, I don't think the Buffalo Tom are taking Mom's Demand out with them on the road. You know, that's kind of inspired me to sort of say we should do something. So, you know, like right now, something similar, just to have a booth. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's you do what you can where you can, and hopefully.
Talking with Buffalo Tom, by the way, and I was trying to get you guys to tour together. I was really pushing hard on that interview, but
that would be very fun. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that would be probably the most sensible and fun thing I can think of. But we're both sort of doing this obnoxious opening for ourselves right now.
So. If that show can happen, though, you know, just once or something, you know, I'll make that trip. I'll do that. That'd be fun to see.
Yeah. Oh my God. That is something that I would absolutely love to do. I mean, and you know, selfishly, my family and bills are extremely close, so
yeah,
it would be very nice.
Well, sort of expanding back on what we were talking about just a second ago, naming the album Dove, I don't know if that had a bigger implication if I'm reading into it too much, you know, as a bird of peace.
Mm-hmm.
In 2018, that seems, and I know that comes from the lyric of what is it? What's the song? Army of
Clay.
Yeah.
Right. That's an umbrella word for us, which is why we liked it, because absolutely peace is a huge part of it. And also and lyrically, there are a couple of bird references on there too, other than Dove. And so we did feel like that was the perfect, you know, especially where it does come up in the lyrics, where at one point it's about not reaching for the bird, and then in the other it's about ignoring the bird, and then but the main thing is the bird is here. And I do mean that in a hopeful and positive way. You know, peace is a struggle, a huge struggle. Peace is not peaceful. And so that's part of the message in that, but then also just the permanence of it as well. So
I thought that was a really cool one. And, you know, it sticks with one-word titles, so you've got that going.
Yeah, yep. I know. Well, and at first we were, you know, sort of saying, let's come up with the longest title ever.
You're going to Fiona Apple the thing.
I'm
yeah,
sort
that's
of laughing with that. Yeah. But then it's sort of like, let's just keep with the, we got a thing. Let's stick with it.
Well, I should also bring up the single. We're playing that. In fact, right before I sat down to give you a call, I had the station on the background, and Shiny One was on, and it sounds so good. And especially, you know, being the first official, you know, not counting the cover that kind of floated out there beforehand, but being the first official song out of 23 years. I mean, what a great statement. What's the story behind Shiny One?
I mean, I personally have the most, you know, sort of, the most, not the most affection for this one, but a big, this was the first completely, you know, communal one that we put together. And I think it really represents just how we wrote, for the most part, this album as a whole. You know, Gail, it started with Gail's chorus. She wrote the chorus and the opening riff. And then Tom wrote verse and bridge, and I wrote lyrics and words over that. And then Chris is, and again, this is an example of Chris bringing a vibe in that completely changed the direction of the song, the groove of it. And then, you know, Tom and I wrote our guitars over it, and it just sort of all came together in this really nice sort of like very natural back and forth that we did remotely initially, just sending it around. And then when we got together, it just kind of gelled. And live, I have to say, this is one of our strongest ones live. So there's, you know, that's something that we bear in mind as well, is how it's going to translate live.
As far as round numbers go, anniversaries go, this does come on the 25th anniversary of Star, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Did that play? Is that coincidence? Is that complete coincidence?
It is complete coincidence. Yeah. We don't have that kind of forethought.
I mean, there's a song on it called Stars Align on the new record, and I thought, well, look at all of that.
I know. That's sort of, that's a little bit, that one is definitely, that was the last one to be named, because we called that one Dreams. The working title was Dreams for a long time, and then we wanted to sort of get away from that word. So we just picked something out of the, and we were like, it's kind of good, because it does sort of hint at, you know, what's happening now, but it's just pulled from the song. That one took a long time to name. There are multiple names all over every work in progress of that one. So that's one of the ones that sort of harkens back to, just in terms of style. So I feel like that it's a good title.
You know, talking about Star turning 25, I didn't know until reading recently, because I wanted to go back and listen to that one too, that was originally intended to be a Breeders album, which I thought was really fascinating. Now that they're doing their thing, they call it the classic lineup, and which seemed weird to me. Is that weird for you at all?
No, not at all. It is. It's, to be fair, I played on Pod and Safari, and then everything they've done since has been without me. And so historically, they have every right to be referring to it that way. Really, and I mean that from the bottom of my, there's no zero ill will among any of those people and myself. It's all fine. And I think that that's, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I do think that is what that's their core. So
I selfishly, as a fan, I think it would really be cool to kind of see some big collaboration, you know, I don't know if you want to call that a reunion, but, you know, something like that happen one day. That would kind of be, that'd be fun. That'd just be fun. I mean, all the kids are playing again, you got Star.
Well, you know, when they're here, when they come here, I sit in sometimes. I get up and I sing. Actually, they completely blindsided me one night and pulled me up, and I really peed in their pool that night. It was, I wasn't expecting it, and I completely screwed it up. So I asked for a do-over the next time they came to sort of redeem myself, which they were calling Redemption Night for me.
That's fun.
But yeah, when they're here, I'm happy to do, when they come to Boston. But, you know, at this point, we're sort of still doing separate things.
Well, like I said, it's cool just seeing everybody still making such great art. I mean, because with Belly and the Breeders and Buffalo Tom, and I see that Dino Jr. is about to do something. You know, everybody from, I mean, Juliana is still out there, you know, knock them out of the park. I mean, it's just insane, because that doesn't always happen. And to have so many people from, you know, a certain area that's still so consistently putting out great music, it's been really great as a fan to experience that.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of the people that you just mentioned are, you know, lifers. And I use this phrase a lot, probably inaccurately, but I think all of those bands have sort of a blue collar approach to work, you know? Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, like, we consider it to be our passion and love, yes, but also our work. There's a, you know, it's what we still do, because that's our job.
Thank God for that.
I mean, among others. Everybody else has state stuff going on, too, for the most part. But the new BT, I love the new Buffalo Tom album.
Oh, seriously? It is so good.
Oh,
it is,
my God. It's so good.
Yeah, I am.
So beautiful.
I wasn't even expecting that one. You know, that one just came through, and I couldn't stop listening to it for 2 or 3 weeks. Just that was it. That was
it.
I'm feeling the same right now about the Belly record. You guys have done such a great record.
Oh,
it's
good.
So good to have you all playing together again. This is fun.
Thanks. It is fun. Yeah, the shows, and also just like the I think the joy of the live shows 2 years ago that really is sort of what made us want to make an album instead of, because at that point we were like, we were just planning on an EP, like a 4-song EP, but we just were so energized by those shows and the people there that's the sole reason it developed into an album. So
congratulations again. And when it gets the release and everything, and you know, 2 weeks after the release, we'll start bugging you for another one.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
All right. It was great talking to you.
Good to talk to you too.
All right. Take care.
Have a good day.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
2018 Belly interview there. And we'll back up just a couple years right before that, when Tanya and I caught up via phone to talk about her solo release, the Swan Song series, as well as at that point, the newly reunited Belly, part 3 of Kyle Meredith with Tanya Donnelly.
Kyle, it's Tanya.
Well, I know it's been a very exciting time for you, and we can jump on in on this because the Swan Song series having just released, and we're looking at, I guess it's a 3-disc collection, right? Compiled of all the EPs of the last few years.
Right.
I mean, there are so many different sounds and instruments on this. And I guess you have the freedom to do that when you're doing EPs. Like, I don't know if you went into that thinking, like, this has to have one coherent sound like some albums would or anything like that. I mean, it's...
No, there was no real thought process at all going into this. It was really more about the people that I wanted to work with than it was about any particular sound. Mm-hmm. So it's all over the place, which I kind of like.
Yeah, did you ever find that any sound was too much of a challenge? Did you ever back away from trying out a new voice or a new character?
There were a couple of songs that were difficult for me to pull. I think probably more on the few examples where someone sent words, because that's lyrics are my lyrics come to me most easily, I should say. And so working with other people's words was challenging a couple of times, and unfortunately I did have a couple of fails in that department. Well, sometimes it's funny because, like, you can have a song that is the biggest pain in your ass ever and just goes nowhere, and then you can have that same situation and then all of a sudden it comes together and it becomes your favorite. So I think, you know, digging in when something is hard is always a good idea, even if it doesn't come to anything.
Yeah.
So,
well, for as long as you've been a songwriter now, in all of your different bands, through all of your solo records, and now this massive little compilation, I mean, you have so many songs to choose from on any given night if you were just wanted to do a show. Like, how hard is it to keep up with your catalog, or do you even pay attention that much to your back catalog?
I do pay attention to the back catalog. I ask people's advice a lot because I don't listen to my own music. So sometimes I do have to go back and sort of read through the track list and see what I've forgotten about. And that's been the case with this Belly reunion too, that people have, as we've been watching our, by we, I mean Tom and Chris, they're doing the website, as they've been sort of handling all the social media for Belly, a lot of songs have come up and, you know, they'll say, hey, this one keeps coming up and we don't have it on the set list, and so we will add it. So
yeah,
I do listen to that, and it's easy to forget, and it's easy for things to fall through the cracks. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm just guessing, though, you must still write, like, fairly consistently, though, to have this much of an output.
Yeah, I do. I collaborate more now, which is where that volume comes from, you know, because I do, honestly, I enjoy writing with other people infinitely more than just sitting by myself. I'm just kind of more of a social worker.
Right.
I like...
That's the business card right there.
Yes.
Tanya Donnelly, social worker.
I like... I just want somebody... I enjoy having someone else in the room, or, you know, I love having... someone else's, it just taps something. And I think that this is the case with almost everybody. It taps something and you just, obviously it wouldn't normally. So you end up being much more prolific as a result, which makes sense.
Has that always been consistent? Because, you know, it's easy to look at your discography and say there was a massive lapse in time there, you know, between 06 and 2013. And maybe you were working on other projects that, you know, just slipped past me or something. But, you know...
No, I wasn't. I mean, I had sort of, very happily, let me preface this with, fallen into, you know, just sort of doing things with my friends locally. And honestly, that's my favorite thing to do, is to show up at someone else's show. so that is what I have been playing out and doing things and pretty active, but, you know, just sort of in Boston for the most part.
It's kind of interesting that when you are a public figure and you know, we as a public get used to you, you know, being around, and suddenly you're not, it's almost like, no, she's disappeared from the face of the earth.
Right. I know, it's so funny. Yeah, that's what the whenever I see those, you know, anybody says, where are they now, about anybody, I'm like, living on Earth, probably.
Cooking.
Probably fine.
They're making dinner right now. They're watching watching something on Netflix. But I know this is a busy year, and you know, you bring up Belly, and of course we need to talk about that too, because this year you're in the land of Belly once again all this time. Like, how are the old clothes and the yearbook photos looking right now? Because this, in some sense, is a nostalgia trip, you know.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it is in some ways. I think, you know, we have decided to, we've been writing a handful of songs to sort of offset that, being to offset it being just a nostalgia trip and nothing else, but you know, it is something. There's also something in it for us, which is that, you know, things ended a little too abruptly for all of our likings, and so I think we're feeling like this is a nice, I keep using the word postscript, but I don't think that's an accurate description. It's more just sort of a, I don't know, epilogue.
Yeah.
You know, something that we're very happy to be doing, and just playing together has been so great, doing that again in these songs, which I've missed quite a bit. So,
you know, you say that, and that sounds like the personal side of it. You know, with writing new songs, artistically, is there an actual need to get something new from the name Belly?
No, I don't think it's so much a need as just, you know, it's I don't know if we would have actually made this decision to write more songs if Tom and I hadn't written for the Swan Song series, and then Gail's band and I wrote together for the Swan Song series. Her partner Chill sent me some music, and I wrote lyrics to that. And so it sort of was kind of a bridge almost, those little smattering of songs we did together for the Swan Songs. It just sort of felt like, well, we did a pretty good job with those, so let's just try some more. So,
as far as the direction, are you ready to talk about what they sound like yet? I know you're kind of keeping them close.
It's hard to know. You know, it sounds like us, but also sort of we're bringing all of our, you know, we've changed a lot individually musically, and so we're bringing that to it as well. It's going to be interesting to see, because we've been trying to sort of do it remotely, kind of like, you know, sending each other tracks, and now here's my new vocal, and now you send this, blah, 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 blah. And we sort of came to the conclusion just this last weekend, actually, that we might want to try to do it in the studio all together, because it's just feeling a little Frankensteinian at the moment. So we'll see how it goes.
And that's where the magic happens, for better or worse.
Yeah, for better or for worse. Tom's like amazing in the studio, and so his quote unquote demos sound very ready,
right.
You know. And so probably I would say the skeletons of his songs would be the ones that would retain most of their original tracks.
I did see you making a joke out there that suddenly you might be having to explain to youngsters that you're not the rapper.
Oh my God.
The same name.
I know. Isn't that so? It's just so funny.
The right thing, by the way, is I thought that you could do that.
You know what? I think, you know, we haven't been active for 20 years, so it just didn't really come up. And I think it's tricky with, I mean, not that we would ever go legal on this, because honestly it's going to be fine and we don't really care that much. And vice versa. I mean, I'm hoping he wouldn't either, but you know, his is like a shortcut for Rebellious, which is his, you know, his pseudonym. So it's sort of tricky in this situation, because isn't there, there's a, like John Doe, for
right.
instance, there's a rapper named John Doe,
right.
and then there's John Doe. I think it's just kind of tricky, because it's sort of like he's a person named Belly. We're an group entity named Belly. I think it will all be figured out. And meanwhile, I think it's just been sort of funny. Yeah. So.
I think the greatest thing in the universe that could happen right now is that you guys come out with a cover version of one of his songs.
I know. That's what we were saying. We were actually saying in practice last weekend. We were like, we should at least learn one song just in case.
Just put it out there. You know, everybody's in the jokes, so it's all good. Well,
it's like, pick the one with the most swears in it, and that's the one we're going to do.
That's it. I can't wait to hear the belly stuff. And I know there's a reissue coming out this month too, right?
On 480 Biggers.
Yeah.
Putting it out. Yeah.
Those are great people over there.
Oh my gosh, I love them. Yeah.
Well, yep. I'm going to get my hands on that, and I so look forward to the new music. And again, thanks for this Swan Song series.
Thank you.
If this is, I think it's established. You're not done making music, but if you're done making music just under your own name, this is a really, really great way to wrap it all up with a nice bow.
Thank you. You know, I have to say, I can say this because they're all collaborations. I'm really proud of these songs.
Yeah. Well, I love them too. So we'll see you out there on the road somewhere.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Kyle.
All right, thanks, Tanya. Bye.
All right, bye.
Tanya Donnelly there. Again, the new record with the Parkington Sisters. That's due out August 14th. Big thanks to Tanya. Big thanks to you, again, for checking out this episode. Before you get out of here, if you're not already a subscriber, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere you like to get your favorite podcasts from. We'll bring you brand new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. After that, head on over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots at Kyle Meredith. Hope you like and follow along there. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.